Welcome to this Creators podcast, and today we are talking about climate change and human rights issues and their connection to the global, like global institutes and global politics. Mm-hmm. And today we have two specialists who is working in the Institute of International Studies in Bolivia. Mm-hmm. And first of all, could you introduce yourself?
Good afternoon, everyone. Here in Bolivia is 3:30 p.m. My name is Patricia Emilia Caballero Barrientos. Currently, I'm a member of the staff of the International Institute of International Studies. IDEI Bolivia is the name. I am a lawyer. I just finished my studies, and right now in the institute, I'm searching about international law and subjects related to climate change and migration. The institute is a non-profit organization, and we focus mainly on academical research and stuff, investigations as well, and we like to work mainly with universities. We work with Universidad Mayor de San Simón, which is a public university here in Bolivia, and we like to give some support, some help, for saying like that, to the studies of international law here in Bolivia. The study of law is a very it's in a very in a transition state, for saying like that, and we're trying to make it give some support to it that can be improved in a positive way, and that international law can have a more weight here in the country. Now I give the turn to my colleague.
Hi, my name is Ingrid Holguín, and just like Emilia, I am a lawyer, and I've been working for the Institute of International Studies for just like 2 months, just as her. Exactly. I've been a volunteer in organizations related to human rights since my early teens, and that's pretty much the reason why I have this subject here, and I have the subject or the field of international human rights and armament. Yeah. And well, as Emilia said, we are only lawyers, and that's like the view of the organization towards all these important topics that are being like discussed around the world. This is like even climate change and migration and human rights are not touched from an activist point of view, which is quite difficult considering that everything that's happening right now in the world related with things related to these fields, it's quite confusing and quite they're really sensitive topics, but the goal is to mainly have this like legal perspective, and yeah, it's pretty much
probably will be a good idea to clarify that here in Bolivia the law has a very different perspective from society than other people. So here in the country, law has not such a weight like in other countries, or does not have the same perspective like in some other parts of the world. And here have more weight stuff like sociology, psychology. Law has a very difficult area to talk about, because people sometimes do not comprehend it very well, or think there is something very simple, which is not. So that's why we mainly focus on academical research and support. That's why we want also to make not only that university, the San Simon University of Cochabamba here grows up. La Universidad Mayor de San Simon, its name in Spanish, has a better and optimistic development on international law and law teaching in general, but also one that all the country and all other institutes and schools as well, it starts to hear us, to listen to us, and to see how important law is for any country and for any society. That the clarification. So.
Okay, that's really good. Thank you. Yeah, we could first of all talk about maybe for the inequality issues and the poverty. I look at some of the statistics, and one of the statistics say that there's about 40% of the people are under national poverty level. And then there is 20% of malnutrition is the malnutrition level is 20%, something like that. So it's quite high levels. And but how do you see the how is it change in time, and how do you see the maybe the righteousness, like the in the law perspective, the inequality, how does that affect to the human rights issues and the situations in Bolivia in human rights and that way.
Unemployment and poverty, malnutrition are always issues treated in South American countries as well as non-quite developed countries, Bolivia, as well as like Central America, some parts of Africa. It's always been an issue since the beginnings of the republic. Now it's a state, before it was a republic. From my perspective and seeing, just like we're growing here, not necessarily like investigating about it, I've seen that these years have been actually quite, I'm not gonna say good, but I'm gonna say that in the last 15 years there has been some improvement in those fields. Before that there was really, well, this country is like other South American countries have these democratic problems always.
Exactly.
There hasn't been like these stable governments, never. So always treating these topics like poverty, unemployment, malnutrition has always come second. And before, people were always fighting for democracy. That has been like the thing for the last, I must say, like 100 years since,
yeah, exactly.
Since it was, yeah,
founded
since 1825. That's a lot of time.
Exactly.
So these new years, I'm not gonna say that the actual government has put in the effort to actually try to, like, I'm not gonna say like eradicate, but like minimize these topics, because not really. I mean, when you look at the legislation in Bolivia, you'll find that the constitution of the country is really interesting. Like, human rights are put like first, and then is everything else.
Exactly.
Everything comes from human rights and sustainability. That's like the that's like the ideal of the country. That's
and
what
the
they say. Like Pachamama
the
and human rights, indigenous people and culture. That's what it's supposedly should be, like it says it should be. It isn't. And that's one of the main problems of human rights for non-developed countries. Like in other countries, like, I don't know, United States, some countries of Europe, the debate right now among human rights is whether or not it's convenient for them. Like, they are we supposed to be in this like post-national scene, or should be more closed and be like Trump says, America first? But for For us, that's not the debate. The debate and the crisis in human rights in South American countries and Bolivia is the whether or not the countries are capable of implementing all these goods that that human rights bring with them. Because it, and it's not, I think one of the main problems, as I said before, it's the problem of the government stability. But other main problem, as Patricia early said, is that law and human rights, especially in Bolivia, are not seen as what they are. Human rights are legal principles. They are not just these ideals that we, it's like this dream we all have about a better world. They are legal principles, and the constitution and the laws in Bolivia are saying that we should be living like by that. Those are the those are the expectations for the government and for everything that we have. As I was earlier saying, I think that there has been an improvement coming from the actual relevance that the talk about human rights are having globally, not really from efforts inside. I think that the biggest efforts being made in Bolivia are the efforts of non-profit organizations like that are specialized in human rights. There are lots of European organizations, some American, there are some other related to the UN, like UNICEF and others. I think that's the change, that the country is adopting this post-nationalist way of seeing and the relations between Bolivia and the rest of the world, since it had stable democracy, like at least in appearance in the last years, has paved the way for these organizations to actually do their work, while the government has only put in some really nice, the constitution is really pretty, we have other really interesting legal instruments, and that has actually helped the work of these people. But there isn't really a change from the government, nor from the authorities, and that has a lot of reasons that I'm not gonna talk about. I'm gonna take too much time.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's it.
Yeah, actually, also the problem is, we're not economists, we cannot tell you specifically how these ciphers can truly explain why certain acts from the government and the management of the National Resources Treaty has, used, like, and how this actually been affected, this statistics that you said of 14% of people practically living in poverty. The improvement that the constitution that we have right now, like said Ingrid, is that it's been included the human rights. It's been included also a lot of principles and rights about climate change and Mother Earth that should be considered and should be respected. That's why earlier I mentioned you that they've been doing a lot of problems when minor companies and in big industries that exploit petroleum and mineral substances in the country, especially in the Oriental Zone like Santa Cruz, Pando, Beni, has been in certain situations and very critical subjects like contamination of rivers and stuff. And the problem of all these things says that, like she said, there are all these legal instruments, but for economical and sometimes from certain authorities or sometimes from people in general, it's very hard to apply these legal instruments. So they are there, but it's hard to apply them for many factors that as lawyer I cannot explain you all of them and tell you clearly. Just tell you that they are there, but there are a lot of many factors here in the country that makes very difficult to apply them. We can use them, but it's very hard. They are not as effective as the constitution of our country wants them to be.
Okay. Yeah, that's really interesting to hear about the situation in here in Bolivia. And
yeah.
It would be like maybe now to go to the international level. I would like to hear about how is the international relations in Bolivia to the like the big institutions that are affecting in the global system, like OECD and WTO, and so how well is Bolivia being heard, or Bolivia or other developing countries being heard in these institutions? How do you see the righteousness of the international laws today for the developing countries?
Well, as I said before, right now international law in a like multilateral, point of view, it's quite like problematic. There is a crisis among human rights and international law in general. As I said before, the countries are like going away from the treaties. They are trying to have these. They're acting really outside of the what was thought that these platforms of international organizations should be, and what their role in them should be. So countries like Bolivia in this type of organizations are like we're expecting what's gonna happen out. So everything that's, I mean, how can I explain it in English? It's not my first language.
We apologize firstly for that. Our main language is Spanish. We actually know English, but we have some lack in certain stuff, so we should have said that first.
It's okay.
So we apologize beforehand, please.
From a legal perspective, the role of Latin American countries in international organizations is, as I said before, like an expectation kind of role. We're expecting like help. We're expecting education. We're expecting a lot of things. But one of the main problems, like I feel like the international efforts towards sustainability and human rights has been quite consistent, and there are really interesting legal instruments. Bolivia has like is part of many, many treaties of human rights, especially as it is one of the main topics in the constitution, because in Bolivia it isn't in practice it's not. But I think that the problem is that when the international organizations create these instruments and create these like types of they decide like work programs which should be implemented in should be implemented in these in like
programs.
Latin American countries, but they don't really understand the dynamics of these countries.
Exactly.
They do all these interesting treaties, but they do not do it in a way that countries like Bolivia or you say Guatemala could implement them like effectively. They are really nice, but there is this problem with human rights that in countries like Bolivia, it is really the government always finds itself incapable of achieving all these goals that they agree to achieve. They sign a treaty, and the country is expected to do everything that it says. Otherwise, it could be like sanctioned, and it is a legal document. But the problem is that countries like Bolivia, even Latin America, pretty much don't have the capability of achieve all these goals. They're always will come into the table these topics like democratic problems, like government instability. Always there's always that thing, and when they create these all these treaties and all these projects for Latin American countries and even well these type of countries that are not really developed, they don't really put in consideration all these other like issues that are gonna come along anyway, because we don't have. I'm always saying it, but it is really big in Bolivia, this of the democratic stability. It is right now, even we have this really big like tension among the country. We're all expecting what is going to happen with the government, and that's the main problem. Why it hasn't, like, I don't think they put that into account. I don't think that the perspective or point of view or even like the cultural like implications of some I don't know topics are put into mind when they are creating all these interesting treaties. It's like they don't think about how is Bolivia, because Latin American countries really seem quite similar. They are not weird. Okay. Like even it's really when you go from Bolivia to Argentina, they immediately know you are Bolivian and they hate you. We're all really different, and that's why we can't have this like unification of like projects or plans or the effectiveness of treaties. Exactly. They will always come into mind social, economical, and pretty much political issues along the way, which I don't think it is something that international organizations can work on, because it's not their labor, and nor they can like visualize what is gonna happen in a place in a country like Bolivia. So I think there is gonna be pretty much that issue of the for in one side, these treaties that are not really created for a country like this, these plans that are not really created for a country like this. Also this country that is not really put into account, and they don't really know how it functions and what it is capable of. What can do in like this amount of time. So I think that's something that really needs time and like a little more effort to kind of adopt this more inclusive way of creating the legal instruments in international organizations, because they always say it is inclusive, that they don't discriminate. I'm just saying they don't really understand, or they don't really have this sociological way of conceiving how we work and how we live.
How South and Central America works, like where I'm really 100% agree with her, is that we had to make a clarification. Bolivia and many other countries that are in development, like subject of the international law, it has the possibility of speaking all the forums and all the international organizations that it's part of. Bolivia actually is part of the United States, the United Nations, not United States, and also is part of the OEA. So every time that a forum and every activity from these organizations are done, we are working at an equal level of all the other countries. However, I do agree with Ingrid that unfortunately, most of the time when treaties and other international documents or legal instruments are done, it's not considered the perspective of the Latin American or growing up countries. like she said, from that tiny made some actually ridiculous example, like of living, going to Argentina, and you are in Argentina, and most of the Argentines are like, they dislike you, or they're not so agree with you. It's actually very common in Latin America. It's very funny. It's very contradictorial, because Latin Americans, we hate each other, exactly, and at the same time, we love and we help each other. Example is what happened in Nicaragua 2 years ago, the crisis in the government, how all these people from Nicaragua have left the country, and in very different places where they went as immigrants, were very welcome, where they were received, they were helped by all these countries that Latin American countries that welcome them, receive them. But at the same time, it's like there's all this other side of why the hell are they invading our country, why they're taking our jobs, etc., etc. It's a very complex culture, the Latin American one. It has not the same dynamic, sociological and cultural talking like in Europe and like United States. In those countries, we have seen that they are a very more united way of thinking certain stuff, but here is such a variety of cultures, of ideas, of visions, of religions. And here in the country, here in Bolivia, for example, we have 36 different languages that are part of 36 different tribes or ethnias that are from this country. So imagine how complex it is to have all these 36 all around the country living. It's not like this huge mix, do not confuse it into city and rural areas, but there's always this like continuously pacing of time where whether you live in the city or in rural areas, you still have this mixture of this ancient cultures, is ancient ways to live, and this globalization world we are like in. And unfortunately, internationally talking, treaties and legal instruments are more created or more elaborated into a way that a worldwide countries that like United States, Europe, that have been from long time the first ones in the world is stability in economic and power and influence, can work on them. Obviously, many of these treaties, especially in climate change and migration, I've seen that they stipulate that these all development countries should have plans or agreements with these grown-up countries to help them improve the result of the treaties. And sometimes some treaties have a very little or less demands to these low grown-up countries about the results they can give exactly for the situation. But the thing is that a legal instrument is very effective in the way that it's created for a situation that can be applied on. So when these international treaties have perspectives more of development countries than non-growth or growing up countries, it's very hard for them to apply. For Bolivia, for example, in climate change, lately there's been this trending of using the sustainable development as a very useful way to fight climate change, and as the same way allow these growing up, these growing or development countries to keep improving their situation and not getting stuck in a place for fighting climate change. So it's like a two-sided coin. You grow up as a country, and this growing up allows you to fight climate change and give your people a better life and a better situation. Obviously, for all of that is needed legal instruments, national and international talking. But when international talking is very more complex, because most of the time, for now I say 100% of the times, development countries need a lot of the support of international organizations that sometimes give them some funding, economically talking, or development countries that come and give some help. Most of the time, like Ingrid said, are non-profit organizations that come here and help us funding, or they that are from some type of this green developing countries that under a program come and help us out. But it's very complex. Like a country, like a state, we can participate in any international forum or activities of international organizations we're part of. It's not like there we cannot participate at all, but when it comes to the library of the instruments, it's very set down, or it's very clear that it's more complex for us. Most times of that, this thing of the majorities of the democracy still goes on that what majority says and minority applies, and I don't think that's so different in international stuff.
Yeah, I totally agree that. Yeah, I have been now in a couple of Latin American countries. I've been in, I just came in, I was in Paraguay. And
nice.
Also in Brazil. And I don't know much, but I have studied a bit of the differences of the those countries. And there are, I can just imagine how difficult is it, because to be in like in the international institutions, tables of the international institutions, when you have a like your own democratic growing
exactly
problems, and then there is the differences in different Latin American countries, and the international organizations are like that there has to be like there are always like groups that are
more influenced than others.
Yeah, they are like listening to each other, and they are like a united groups that are powering their national interests. And when there is like some countries that are not so united to others, then they are quite vulnerable to be in a corners and not be heard. And that's the one thing also in development aid.
Exactly.
That's the problem is that luckily it has been changed. But some changes have been in development aid, that it's not so much anymore that Western countries are coming here and so the hey, this is the this is how things should be done, so we can come here and show how you can done the things then, and that's the old like development aid the policy. But today we are, I think it's got more and more coming that we become like united with, have more, your organizations are doing the changes in here, and we can just give you support. But the thing is that there's always like national interest in always in development aid also. In Finland there's like they're always like looking what's the how our companies can also come here or in developing countries, and how they can improve their like sales and in that way.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
It's always looking for that, so it's not pure. You have to be careful when you
exactly.
So that's a thing. It's like how it's really difficult to how this could be the fairness, how can we improve the fairness of institutions in global level in a way, because like you said about climate change, it's climate change is all of our problem, and it's it's really big problem, and it will affect everyone. And like the one thing is really like a challenge of developing countries, how they will develop their country, and how they because if, like I said in the beginning, if you have in Bolivia, there's 40% of people is under
poverty
level, and if those all the people who are under the poverty level, and if you're your income level will come to the same level as in Europe.
Exactly.
So that's the like the emissions will grow in the way like it happened in China. And like in China, there was I think their emissions were in 90s or something like that, was quite the same as you have, like two tons of CO2.
Yeah,
and
huge.
Now they have like seven or eight. So if that happens in all the developing countries, so that's game over for climate.
Changing.
So that's the we need to understand how the fairness could be done in a development.
Well, it's very complicated, honestly. Like Ingrid said, we are always first saying our legal perspective, and then probably a little bit of other areas that we see here, studied a little bit. But legally talking, Bolivia, it's an environmental topic. It's kind of stuck, and I've been doing research on how is our legal, our national legal situation, and many of our laws are very how to put it in. They're not adequated to the situation that we have right now. Sure, we have we're part and we have signed our treaties about environmental protection and fighting climate change, but internal laws have not been adequated to that in a very effective way for the things we said earlier. No, we're a very grown-up state, and there are a lot of things that have more priority than others. Between those is the growth of the development of the cities, of the access of rural areas to basic services like water, electricity, and roads. So in the environmental stuff, we have a lot of supreme decrees that declare very areas that are national national treasures for Bolivia, that are protected, there should not be disturbed, should not be violated, or should not be contaminated or destroyed. We have a general law about environment, but it's very outdated, exactly. So when you compare how are the, for example, in Switzerland, I think, or Rwanda, I don't remember, or Finland, I don't remember exactly the country. I think it's Switzerland or Switzerland. Yeah. There are laws and politics about how you should manage your trash, and if you don't dispose of your trash in the correct way, you have to pay a mult. So these type of things here, they're not. It does not exist. That's why I told you earlier, it's very common walking in the street of Cochabamba, La Paz, any of our cities, see trash in the streets, in the middle of the roads of they're going to cars, because people is not so conscious. There is not a huge conscience about the protection of our environment. We do have these beautiful and ancient cultures is still very heard and of the mother earth, Pachamama. Even in our constitution, there are principles that Amakella, Amasua, they say don't lie, don't be a thief, live well, and many others that come from these ancient cultures. They're very well, they have this system of life very related to live in harmony with the planet. But there's been this very weird and funny, as I've been seeing so far, and of the little bit I know, the fusion, for saying like that, from these cultures to the globalization society we have right now. It's like, okay, we have all these principles, we love Mother Earth, we love Pachamama, we have all these principles, but at the same time, I have to work, I have to go to different places, I need a car, I need to earn some money to pay their bills, to pay some food to eat every day, I have to pay the rent. So it's very complex to see how these two different cosmovisions and ideas of living fusioning here. That's what happens in general Latin America. It's very complex. It happens more in some countries than others. And this also makes very difficult that certain laws can be really effective and applied in a country. For example, the Tunari here in Bolivia is protected, actually, for one of the supreme decrees. But even though there are a lot of people who still go to the National Park of Tunari and burn, make some,
Here that they call chaqueo, which is exactly that they prepare the land for production, like they're gonna put in there some, I don't know, corn, and they what they do is that they
burn.
Yeah, they start a fire, a big fire, which like
uncontrolled
leaves everything. leaves like this ceniza,
ashes.
Like, yeah, these ashes that are supposed to fertilize the earth. So it prepares it for the actual like production of the goods. But like to complement a little of what Patricia was saying about this develop the expectation of having a first world like kind of life here in Bolivia, I think that there is gonna be always some pretty big issues with that, because Bolivian economy is based primarily on two things: taxes, which are really big for the government right now. Taxes always every day. I think like the lawyers that work in that field are like rich right now, because every day it changes and every day there are more taxes. It's like in those really like in Robin Hood's
the fairy tales or tales, like when how's the name of the king that fights Robin Hood? Well, that king all the time appears with the new taxes, and the people of the kingdom is ended up in jail or not being able to pay the taxes. It's like that is one of the main problems actually in the law of
factor. Yeah, it's that this way of having money. Function. And the second really big like economic like factor and what we all live with is the extraction of our mineral and natural resources, which are like petroleum and like gold
and some minerals, basic minerals like copper.
And this is like a big issue for like human rights and sustainability, like climate change. Because there are these contracts that they sign, and this is something that I feel it's a big issue, and I don't think like the lawmakers or even the government right now cares about, is that when you wanna extract like gold in Bolivia, you basically have to do a contract with the country, because it manages everything. Mm-hmm. So this contract, it's gonna last 30 years. And this contract doesn't have these like specific like terms to make your company like take care of the place you're gonna extract from, or to like kind of after you finish the 30 years to kind of reestablish how you found it. You don't, these companies, they do not take care of the rivers or the lakes. Just like 2 years ago, a big lake really dried. It disappeared from like night to day. It wasn't lake anymore. And it was like this really old lake that had been related to many, many cultures for the country. It was really big for a group of people
mm-hmm.
that lived
yeah.
from there. And it was really hard, and it almost passed like in the news like a flash. No one really cared.
Exactly.
The government literally lied, and they say it always had tried.
Right.
It will be refilled someday. And like
yeah.
it doesn't exist anymore. And that's one of the consequences of mineral extraction, that these contracts, they do not put in mind to take care of the government. Don't care. They care about these companies helping Bolivia develop.
Mm-hmm.
We want to grow. We want to have a better life. We all want to have cars. We all want to have like a lot of like nice things in our houses.
And like
the government.
Typical American lifestyle is the basic American dream. Like yeah, these countries are gonna come and they're gonna extract all our minerals or natural resources, and they're gonna generate insource. You're gonna get money into the country. We're gonna be able to construct more cities. We're gonna be able to give toward people more cars and stuff. And it's kind of like this utopic and soft way to say we're gonna earn more money to make people content, but they're not doing it in a way that is internationally talking like a lawyer, talking like legal aspect. I, Bolivia's state, for an example, I have assumed the responsibility of many treaties voluntarily. Every treaty that any state assume is on its will. Nobody forces any country to be part of a treaty and apply the content of the treaty that it has been accepted by the country. So it's like they say, hey, we have signed this, you all are protected, but that's not enough. The country has to create legal instruments, internally talking, that can allow these treaties to be effective inside its territory. And when you hear what Ingrid says, that not only they sign a contract with the country, they also have to sign a contract with the public institution that from the area that it's related to the state that is going to control, is going to be the direct actor from the state that is going to be supervising or going to see how it's been doing the exploitation from the industry, and that is going to receive the incomes. And here in Bolivia, we are divided in departments. This department are different provinces, will be said.
Yeah.
Like provinces and much minor territories that are called in municipios. ¿Cómo se podría decir?
It's like little cities. It's
exactly.
It's divided in little cities, each department.
Exactly. So each little city inside the city, we're saying like that, Cochabamba is the department, and the little cities or municipals are like Yacoyo, Sacaba, Vinto, Tarique, etc. So when, for example, there is a very interesting, ¿cómo se dice? Pozo? Or yeah, let's say that in Sacaba is a very interesting source of petroleum to exploit, and there is a national or transnational industry that wants to exploit it. It has to first have the authorization of the government of the country that is doing a contract with the mayoralty of Sacaba, and this mayoralty also gives to the ¿cómo se dice asamblea legislativa?
The legislative.
The legislative assembly, and the contract. And by constitution, it has to be the late legislative power who approves this contract and then says to the majority of this departments or cities that they have been approved and they can go on explore. And the Constitution of Bolivia, one of these articles says that any company that wants to exploit or minerals or petroleum or any natural resources, which the Bolivian people is the sovereign and the owner of it, has to have a very a careful contract that considers the protection of the environment. And if there is a very original indigenous community living there, it has to apply the previous consult. And if it's not, hasn't not been done that, most of the time the country should be not accepted, should be rejected. But most of the time does not happen that. And this happens, and these contracts are approved, and these exploitings are doing, the contamination is going on. And most of the time people does not know about it until it's late, until it's been already a lot of contamination. And then they're like, who has signed the contract, who has approved it, why? If there's an indigenous community living there, why they haven't done the previous consult?
Why have they have been displaced?
Exactly.
From their homes, like.
Exactly.
But one of the biggest problems with these contracts is that they come back from the 1970s. That's when they started with this contract system. Like, the way that now, the big change for the mineral extraction right now is that now these companies pay the government. Before it was, they were privates. Like, I mean, I have a lot of money and I'm gonna have this little like mountain in Oruro, which has like silver, and I'm gonna do a contract with this American company for them to extract it, and I'm gonna have the profits. But the one big change, and I think like that's, it's kind of important for the economy. It's really difficult in that.
And are you speak about when you're a lawyer?
Yeah, because it's really good. It has been good for the economy of the country, those contracts. But the main problem why they can't be more sustainable is that they come from many, many years ago, before Bolivia like signed these treaties and these international instruments, and actually before the constitution was
made
approved.
Exactly.
It's really new. It's from 2008. And it's like this big, big thing that they sold to us, and we all thought it was going to be
effective. And the reality shows is not, and like she just clearly said it, most of these type of contracts or legal instrument has a very 70s nature or
90s.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So they're very old. They're not adequate to what is right now happening. And that shows how difficult it is for a very grown up country to adapt it to the international responsibilities that they assume through the treaties of a climate change. And something that I've also been seeing right now is that climate change also has been having a very close up relationship with migration issues. What I just said about 40% of people being in poverty is not only related with climate change, but also with migration. Many people is getting into this level of poverty exactly for this thing of the climate change. Like I told you, Bolivia has not only this petroleum and taxes in sources, many of the informal commercials and like the ones who sell hot dogs, and you see, for example, in American movies, the people who sell his hot dog cart and his coffee cart and going through the street selling all these type of things. Here in Bolivia, is the majority of the jobs that are been going on. I mean, regular jobs has been having a very more decaying situation, and informal commerce. People working with no social security, with not a contract, without many other legal assurances or something like that, live day by day. and is the most of the flow of the economic in the country, which is ironical because the very minimal percent of regular jobs are the ones who pay the most majority of the taxes, and the informal commercials are the ones who sell daily their stuff, and they don't know pay taxes, but at the same time they are legally unprotected. They don't have social security, they don't have a health security and stuff. That's why also lately the and this is more related to human rights stuff, the universal security system that was tried to imply this year in the clinics and the healthy system in general, that's right now collapsed. Exactly for what I just told you, that when we've been telling you that we're a growing up country that has not enough resources to fulfill all this legislated, this righteous and equality levels that we will want, not only for climate change, but also for people. And this type of situations is causing that since people living from agriculture, from animals, they have their farms where when they sell the milk, say the meat, and say the fur of their animals. The ones who live from fishing, from other type of activities related to the environmental, have no resources. Honduras lately has been suffering a very major migrant situation because their coffee cultives are being destroyed for climate change, and the many families and people who live from that don't have a very stability because of that, and they have to live and go. So climate change is not only affecting the health of the planet and our security in general, it's affecting also the economic growth of many countries, and the main one affected is ironically the growing of the developing countries. So it's a very interesting subject to see how this tiny thing from like climate change is affecting so much the developing countries and how much they are having to fight on and how hard it is for them legally talking to adapt to these international treaties and to these beautiful international principles and ideas and goals when they are not being enough supported internationally talking, and when the legal instruments are not done in a way that they can actually execute them or apply them.
It's really problematic, and I have like seen statistics of this, like there is unemployment was really low.
Exactly.
It was like 3%, but that's the thing.
Exactly.
Everyone is working, but it's like the income, they have to work because the social security system is there's
it's very
not
basic
system.
Or not
yeah.
existent practically.
Yeah, that's the reason, and so that's what I have seen here, like it's in many developing countries it's the same thing, that everyone is have a some kind of a shop or something to sell. They're always
exactly
every house has something, some kind of a little shop that they're selling something. That what you see in low income areas, and that's really interesting to hear and how improved in a way that there should be also sustainable jobs, because if everyone is selling something, there most of the things that they are selling is
plastic wrapped and
really problematic for climate. And so that's there's like could be some sustainable works also, and if that would be supported from Western countries that give funds for improving and establishing sustainable works.
Well, I think it all comes into one. Like Emilia studies like climate change, and I study human rights. And what I've seen is that this, as I said before, tax paying is like this big income that the government has to have this whole country
functioning. So I've seen that these taxes have been like killing like local industries, and it has like become this country where like only the strongest are surviving. And it's not really, how can I explain? Okay, there are these big companies that are here, like Coca-Cola and Pepsi and some others, I think. And what they do is that they're able to pay the taxes, and they have people working for them, but they contribute a lot to the pollution, and they contaminate. You have seen like Rio Rocha, which is this river that crosses the whole city. It smells really bad. And it's not because we are yeah, like earlier Patricia was saying that we have this non-existent like education as a society to like take care of the environment, but also this river is not like smelling bad because we are all day throwing like our trash in there. It smells bad because it comes from these companies that are working, and they use the waters of the river, do this process, I don't know what they do in there, and then it comes the river and it's like dark and like almost waterless. And it smells really bad. And I think that in a matter of human rights in Bolivia, the excessive like taxing in many fields has been affecting directly into the like implementation and guarantee of human rights, and it has a direct impact in economy. Like a lot of the time people think that human rights, when I talk about human rights, everybody's like, now everything it's about human rights, right? And I'm like, no, but they're important because we're all humans. That's how we function. We're humans, we need human rights. And like everyone associates them with like political speeches. They are not, as I said before, they are legal principles. And I think that in the matter of human rights, there has to be some more like legal instruments that protect people from the taxes that their government can't put on them, because it's not just for like industries, it's for like everyday people. Even us as lawyers, if we want to go out of this institution and open our own like little consultory
office,
we're gonna have to legal pay a lot of taxes. So that affects like really directly to the economy, so that people can't find work. And it's not because like we are like a Latin American country and we are poor. It's not like that. We are capable, and we had like many like growing little industries, even from artisans, but they have been closing because of these excessive taxing. Yeah. And for me, that's a really, I don't think that taxes and human rights have always been related, and economic rights like are meant to have people from some place living a certain type of life and being able to obtain goods and have work, a house and everything. But it doesn't, like, it comes, I think it is, I think that taxes should be treated from a human rights perspective, because it is affecting it directly, and it's not treated that way, at least not in Bolivia. I don't know if in any European countries or like, I don't
others.
Know, if there is like this, there are laws that protect people against excessive taxing. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But here it doesn't. Here there aren't. And it is really, the impact is direct. And I think it's affecting lots of groups of human rights. And I think if we could like have these, I don't know. I think that there should be like an international treaty, and that Bolivia should want to like sign the treaty. So that's not a way. But I think that if this problem of the taxes could be treated from an international human right point of view, and if there will be a way to make the government like understand that impact and stop taxing so high, there could be an actual possibility to talk about industry in Bolivia in a sustainable kind of way. Because right now, with all the taxes, there isn't even like an industry talking. There is just, we need jobs. There are a few big industries like the mineral extractive industries that are really big and they contaminate a lot. And they have been even like sickening the people. Like people have been getting sick from, they have been getting even cancer from the water that has been contaminated with these companies, even from these others like Coca-Cola and Pepsi, that there should be this talking about taxes and their impact in human rights, so that once you have this, like I don't know, equal or like just taxes, there can be really we could really talk about industries and then making them sustainable. Because right now there is, if like I don't know, international industries have been fleeing from Bolivia. They don't want to be here anymore. Only the most, as I said, powerful stay, because it's really expensive and they can't afford. It's not like, I mean, every industry wants to have profits, and if you don't have them, it's like you're not gonna be like wasting your money someplace. So I think that's the main issue right now that's been kind of like holding back their like sustainable development and even just development of the country and the guarantee of human rights right now.
And also something, I don't know if you said it before, but also the main reason why I agree with this more human rights perspective, like of the tributes or the taxes, is that here in Bolivia, for example, the tributary system or the taxes system is like, if they have you didn't pay your taxes on time and you have you have to pay for the like a sanction for it, economic sanction. So when you go and turns out that the taxes system has been wrong and you actually paid your taxes on time, and the extra money you had to pay as a sanction was actually a mistake, they do not return you that money. They only imprint a paper, like kind of like a receipt, like a paper saying, yeah, we're gonna condone this type of this amount of money if you in the future do not fulfill your taxes obligations. It's like we have your money, we're not gonna return you, despite it was our mistake to say you did not fulfill your time on paying the taxes. But don't worry, if the next time you, for any reason, you do not pay it on time, we're gonna discount that infraction of yours. And you just have to present this paper with our sellos, como se dice, cells? No. With our little impulse or that is from us, this paper, and you say, hey, you charge me with a sanction the other time, and are you with this discount from that, like. Is many industries actually live for that, because they say, okay, I'm not gonna pay my tax, or they're gonna pay me a high tax, and if I don't fulfill it on time, they're gonna make me pay more as a sanction, and if it's a mistake, they're not gonna return me the money. And this is where the hell goes my profit? How I, as a company, and we have to be realistic in the matter. And non-company, whether they have the best intentions, whether they want to make a very sustainable development in our countries or not, will not do any project, will not execute any program if their profits are not be enough decent for them. That's something that we cannot deny, which is legally talking for them as an obstacle. So if they say the taxes are gonna be against me, why am I gonna do any job investment here?
Yeah.
Or investment, exactly. It's not going well for not only for my pocket, but for my workers' pocket. What type of money I'm going to pay them, with what I'm going to give them their salary, which they used to survive each month, and they were not going to leave me. So that's something that, unfortunately, sometimes taxes and certain law instruments are not considered. And something that also is problematic here in Bolivia is that when we elaborate certain laws, we do not do it in a way that reflects completely our reality or our economic level. It's like most of the time it's a copy paste from another laws, and we change on some certain subjects, and it's like, hey, it's done, this is the law. Or we bring people from the exterior, experts from Spanish, from Spain, sorry. I got a little bit of a oblivious there. From United States, from Europe, to the most of the time from countries that have a very political alignment to the government, the actual government here. And we ask these professionals from the exterior to make our laws, or to make the project of laws that we're gonna in the future implement and gonna be our legal instruments. And that's a very huge mistake that here in the country, like Ingrid said, not only in climate change, but in educational and legal stuff, as a country, we do not have a very growing up development. It's like we're having a crisis in that type of thing, I assume. And I'm actually with her in a very agreement when we in the subjects that we do not have a very collective conscious on these matters that are very important, and the people should not be so fairly like, okay, but they are the ones in the charge. They're there because they know, so whatever they're doing is fine, and we're just gonna wait there, prove it. And sometimes people do not comprehend, and if there's not someone who says, hey, wait, this is wrong, or this is bad, this should not be approved, or this should not be part of one of our legal instruments because it's gonna affect us in this way or another. Just recently people say, okay, maybe we should pay attention. But if someone else does not say it, a huge drama in social media, when the press, nobody actually cares. And that's a very huge issue. And I think that something else that should be very interesting, not only how climate change and human rights should be protected more, is that here in Latin America, the reports of the authorities about how they manage our money, or the money of the state, is not something very common, or something that is very introducing to our society. For example, in our moment, we work here in the staff oral themes, our main topics, but we also some of other times we watch other ones, no? And there was a few times when I saw how was our legal instruments about armament, and I saw that we have more than 70, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, please, Ingrid, more than 70 or 60 supreme decrees approving since the Bolivia had a very, like Ingrid said, a very instability in democratics, and from 1960s and to 1980s we had a very lot of military government, and they're always ¿cómo se dice golpe de estado en inglés?
There was a lot of chaos.
Exactly. So there were between the 60s and the 80s, and there are the dates I remember clearly, actually, there was not a political stability because there were more than 10, I think, presidents that were all militaries. And during since those times till now, there are more than 60 or 70 supreme decrees approving the bought or the acquirement of military equipment, like weapons, like tanks, like helicopters. And so far, I have not seen any agency news from our country that says or talks about any inform or any account that says, hey, our government has approved this type of payments from the National Treasury Nations fundings, and say how many money has been spent on all these type of things. And in general, we do not know here in Bolivia, we don't have a very clearly show off from the authorities of how our money is being handled. So this type of saying to the people, like authorities, I do not remember right now the term, the specific term in English, of them openly seeing or saying to the people through media, to their official social medias, to the press, how their management or money, or state money, is something that also is making more easy for the people to ignore how important or how less is the action of the state about being more compromised to give actually a better good result to our development and to how to improve our life change, lifestyles, how to this type of activities are actually, our money is being very well implemented in fighting climate change or in how making the migration will be less, and how this amount of money is actually going to help in development of human rights, fulfilling, for example, the Pact of Social, Economic, and Cultural Rights. There are these rights in international talking, they are in this type of nature, this type of classification of progressive, which means that they are not rights or legal principles that any state, like in the civil and political ones, put in a law, and they're effective. They're more, they can be claimed more immediately. The social, economical, and cultural rights, for the nature they have that are progressive, establish that the states, in between what they can do under their possibilities, they have to be development, they have to be worked on. And many of the times when these countries in general don't, or the people in general don't know how his or country is managing the money, they don't know how much of that is being directed to this type of human rights or how they're affecting other type of things. So this is a legal figure, sorry, I do not remember the word correctly, that is very new also in Latin America, and it has very to do with taxes and all these other subjects. How
access to information, the right to access to public information.
Exactly.
That's like a big right we'll have along with freedom of speech. However, like as Emilia was trying to say, it is not a big thing in Latin American countries and many parts of the world. It isn't. I feel like nowadays there has been this really big debate among where these rights go and how they are being implemented worldwide.
Mm.
What I find really concerning about the right to public information is that it is something quite big in Bolivia. As I said before, we have a constitution, which is even studied in other parts of the world, because all people have access to have the right to access to water, access to water and sanitation.
Exactly.
It has we all have the right to have to possess a house, and it says that we should be living right now.
In a utopia.
have this really big life, I don't know.
Exactly.
I said before that taxes are really big in Bolivia, and that's really a thing that's been holding back human rights. But as a Latin American country, I think that, as many others, the main problem right now is the problem that it is even when you talk about the problems that are happening in Syria and all those countries near, is that the governments are not capable to implement human rights, to protect them, to guarantee them. And that's the main problem we have also here. And I find that really concerning, because in other parts of the world, as I said before, the debate is whether or not it's convenient for them to be part of those treaties, to be part of those organizations, I don't want to use this word because I don't think it is actually, but to protect us. And they are actually thinking, is it good for us to help, like the Trump speech? I think that's the most famous, but it actually reflects this growing tendency in politics international. And I find that really concerning, because while in the other side of the world, people are like, should we really be doing this? We are still struggling to implement all these goods, and it's really hard, I feel, because in this whole crisis of international law, I don't think where human rights are gonna end up, and for a country like us, and even globally.
I feel like the main problem is that there can be the governments in places like this can't implement them. Governments outside are rethinking them. And I think
are reluctant to it.
Yeah, there are many, like, I think that human rights right now are like really big, and I think that's, we all know that there have been like, well, people like to think it's decades of to for them to develop, but they were born like in the, even when the United States became an independent state, like the La Carta Magna, the United Kingdom, and I think that there are like hundreds of years of this battle towards obtaining them. Yeah, and I feel like right now the main problems are like just one of the main causes for this whole crisis among human rights for me is that it's how it grew. Like, it has become this global thing that it is really important and like obligatory for all states to accomplish, and that's why they've been rethinking them. And that's why there have been coming these all big concerns like terrorism and this diversity managing like struggles from European and like other countries, developed countries, and even like the problem of the refugees, migration. And I think that in other platforms there should be a voice for like countries like us, because while they are like negotiating like getting out of them all, we are still struggling to adopt and to have this ideal type of life. But also I think that the debate, even if it's not between like smaller countries like Bolivia, the big debate in international human rights right now law should be, where are they going? What's gonna happen next? What we're seeing is this restructuration of the international system. I think that they should come with an answer. That has been my main question right now with my investigation, is that I think that there is a crisis. I think that this is a struggle. There is another struggle, but there you can't really see what's the path it's gonna do, all the countries or the international community is gonna follow. We don't know where it's all gonna end, and it's really concerning since we haven't really developed yet.
Exactly.
That's the thing, in that in development aid, and the problem is that like our government is some European development policy is the kind of a helicopter money policy.
Yeah.
And that's really problematic, the helicopter money policy in many developing countries. Their institutions are struggling in a way that in democracy problems and the taxing, ineffective the taxing system in many developing countries, and that's the problem, that those issues has to be improved, that it can be effective, the development aid. And now we could end the last words could be both of you could say something about how can we have talked about a lot of like global institutions and human rights and climate change issues, but how can institutions like EU and countries like Finland and other Western countries, how could improve the situation in Bolivia and other developing countries and in the human rights perspective and also in ecological sustainability issues?
Well, I think that it has to be, I don't think that there can be a really big improvement that can be done right now due to all the democratic and social issues that we have as a country right now, because usually the like improvements comes like between an organization and the government of a country, but right now that is not going to really be effective, as it hasn't been like all these years that the government of Bolivia has been working with many organizations, like from even from China, they have been working with many Chinese people.
Yeah.
But there hasn't been really an improvement between with that system. I think that improvement can be done how it has been done, can be, yeah, we can do an improvement how it's been done till right now, which is like little steps. I think that organizations, as I said before, like non-profit or even related to international organizations have made a really bigger impact than the that like government, like states cooperation in the international, in an international platform. I think that if we will have like some improvement here, it has to be by creating more of these organizations that they, there are many, some of them are for women's rights or even sustainability education, and they have really done an impact and they have really educated people. Like I said before, I've started my interest in human rights and international law in my early teens, like in a non-profit organization that worked with human rights, and it has, well, the country years ago implemented a series of new like laws that regulated these organizations, and many of them closed, and that has been also like really a big
issue here,
yeah, for these organizations to function. I think that's the best way to help a country like this, because right now to help a country as unstable as Bolivia, like between cooperation, interstatal cooperation, is not really gonna function in the way that it should be. I think that, like you said, baby steps should be what we need right. Yeah, it's what we need right now. I don't know if you wanna add something.
Of course. Well, about climate change and migration, actually, I can do my part. I do agree with you 100% about what is the way of we can improve the support in Bolivia, not only Bolivia but also countries that are in the same situation, is not only non-profit organization, but I think that the society as a community as well can do something. I think that people should pay more attention to people like Greta Thunberg, because she's showing that if you want to make a change in your country, if you want to create conscience about something, you can do it. That little girl started alone in front of the building of the Congress every Friday with a pancard, with a paper, saying that they should be done something for climate change. I do not doubt, even though in social media or in press has not been saying too much, that they, and not only the Congress, but many people should have very criticized her a lot, like saying, what is this little girl doing, wasting her time with this dumb paper about climate change instead of going to school and study and prepare herself. But she showed to everyone that this type of things, like climate change, it's more important than something so orthodox like educational systems or following up what we always do. It's hard for a society, it's hard for a government to break the mold, for saying like that, and make changes. But right now we cannot be comfy, we cannot feel ourselves inside a bubble and say I'm comfy, I'm not gonna do anything, everything is working normal, so I don't need to make a change. No, that is not the fact. Internationally talking, the organizations are moving on. Various states are applying politics about sustainable development, sustainable energies. And the main problem right now is with the growing up countries, because we do not have the same ways that developing countries to go on and fight against climate change. And I think that people should get more conscious about all these things. Should not just stay and say, oh, my government will do something, nonprofit organizations will do something, and I'm just gonna lay around and wait for the results and hope that everything's fine. No. Nonprofit organizations are fighting for us as a society to take conscience about how important is climate change and how important it is to make something about it. It's not only about not losing wildlife. Polar bears are in extreme danger of disappearing. A very beautiful species that is one of the most important ones in what I've been investigating so far to keep healthy the ecological system of Antarctica. And that is not the only main problem. Around the world, wildlife disappears. Many plants and flora variety disappears. The planet itself is going to be unable to be habitated and unable to satisfy our needs. And not only that, if the planet itself disappears or is not able to survive, we're not gonna have the means to work. We're not have the means to have a home. We're gonna be victims of natural disasters all the time. We're not gonna have water. We're not gonna have clothing. We're not gonna have many things. Like species, we're gonna disappear. And that is a thing that people is not taking conscious because they're not living directly, but we're gonna live it soon. Internationally talking, there are treaties that make the governments, make the states take action, but they're not gonna do it seriously if we do not make our part and make them take more conscious. I think that not only nonprofit organizations, not only activism or activist people like Greta Thunberg are a very good example of how most of the times governments are on their own, cannot do everything. It's about us too. Not only in climate change, but I think in human rights.
Thank you. Thanks for the interviews. It has been really interesting to hear about everything you said in
mm-hmm.
the situation in Bolivia. And I think it helps also our mission, like we are a small organization in Finland and we are trying to improve the global righteousness and global issues, and we are trying to affect in our government and EU level in the way that it helps like developing countries like Bolivia and others, because we are all in the same in the when we about the climate change, we are all in the same boat for that, and it's not going very like the situation is really bad, and we need to cooperate more and do like in every level.
Exactly.
All right, thank you for the interview.
Thank you. As the International Institute of International Studies, we thank you a lot for your interest, and we thank you for allowing us an academic point of view and legal point of view to put out why it's important to talk these subjects and why it's important to take more conscious about it. We hope that our mission there is mainly not only talk about these features, but also talk about it in a very academic, educational, and professional way to create more consciousness. So thank you for giving us that little chance.
Thank you. Thanks.